There are many issues involved with grazing on public lands, and they have arisen anew of late. The conflicts around grazing on public lands were shoved into the spotlight during the annual armed occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in eastern Oregon. The Bureau of Land Management allows livestock grazing on more than 20,000 square miles of land in Oregon and Washington. That's an area four times the size of the Willamette Valley. Ranchers have been frustrated by environmental regulations they see as a threat to their livelihoods, but the fact is many of those regulations only exist on paper. They're not fully enforced by federal land managers. Jess Burns of our EarthFix unit reports.
It's breakfast time on Catcher Ranch. A ranch hand puts his tractor in low gear, jumps on the trailer being pulled behind, and pushes loose piles of hay off the back. He's a popular guy. A line of hungry cattle chase him down. Some even leave their calves behind in the ice-crowned stubble. Angie Catcher and her husband own this ranch. Her son is the popular ranch hand.
You have to feed a cow every day. I mean, it's just like us. They have to eat. No vacations, no nothing in the winter.
The feeding schedule gets easier in the spring when their 900 head of cattle move from this pasture in a narrow, treeless valley up over the opposite ridge. That's where the Catcher's slice of public grazing land begins and spreads out across the sagebrush sea. From a spot high above the valley, Catcher points out two mountains way off in the distance.
And our permit goes clear to there and then out to 395.
It's a lot of land.
It is a lot of land, but you have to remember here in the high desert, it takes between 25 and 50 acres to run one cow.
This tract is just one of dozens overseen by the Burns BLM. They're responsible for making sure the land remains in good health, not just for livestock, but for the environment, recreation, and other uses. But the reality in Oregon and Washington since 2006 is that staffers do compliance checks on only about a quarter of these tracts, called allotments, each year. Sandy Wyman works for the BLM in Prineville.
A lot of times our folks haven't been out to certain parts of these allotments to see what the situation is in many years, and that can be troublesome. And we don't have the manpower to look at everything all at the same time.
And when the BLM does broader evaluations of range health, critics say they often don't do a very thorough job. Ecologist Peter Latin is a former BLM contractor and whistleblower.
In many cases, allotments that the agency identified as meeting all standards would clearly and unambiguously fail to meet standards. A quick examination of aerial imagery shows the allotments to be just trashed.
The standards he's talking about make sure streams aren't trampled, the soil doesn't erode away, and wildlife have good habitat. Other scientists have pointed out shortcomings in the broader assessments as well. An EarthFix analysis of BLM grazing data shows that about half of the evaluated land in Oregon and Washington doesn't meet environmental standards required by law. The BLM says it is addressing these deficiencies. But in a way, it doesn't matter. In 2004, Congress changed the law in response to industry complaints about how slow the BLM renewed grazing contracts. Now, if the BLM's environmental review isn't complete, a permit can be automatically re-upped, even if the land isn't healthy, and even if livestock are known to be the cause of the poor health. The allotment near Burns, Oregon, that Catcher shares with three other ranchers is an example of this. In a 2002 evaluation, the environmental health of this huge tract was given a failing grade, with livestock damage being the cause. But since then, all of the grazing permits there have been renewed under the provision. Again, Peter Latin.
If there is a failure, then they are required to make changes.
The BLM says there is a new but unfinalized evaluation of the Catcher tract. This time, the land meets all environmental standards. But the new passing grade has less to do with changes in grazing and more with deciding there wasn't enough water flowing in a cow-damaged creek for it to count as a stream that needs heavy protection. I'm Jess Burns reporting.
Jess Burns from our EarthFix unit is based in our newsroom here at JPR. She's in the studio with me for a debriefing along with Tony Schick, who is part of the reporting project as well, who joins us by phone. Tony, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Jess, good to have you here. Tony, let's start with you. Give us some history. How long have the feds leased land for grazing?
A long time. Grazing in the West really started to take off in the years, you know, before and immediately after the Civil War. But a lot of that was very unregulated, and the conflicts that arose in that and the damage that was done because of all of that unregulated overgrazing, that's where the BLM kind of arose out of in the 1930s was the first attempts to regulate this at the federal level. So it's been happening for quite a long time.
So Jess Burns, the falling behind on keeping up with maybe not the maintenance, but at least the assessment of this, how big a backlog is it? How much land is unassessed at this point?
Right now, at least in Oregon and Washington, a full third of it hasn't even been looked at for these kind of basic health standards. You know, the BLM is really says that they're focusing their efforts on high priority tracks, and with, you know, the sage grouse protections coming in, you know, they're starting to focus more on that, or land that has failed in the past. But that just means that there's just huge swaths of land out there that just haven't been looked at. Tony probably knows a little bit more about Westwide, what the failure rate or what the non-assessment rate is.
Yeah, this project comes with a bunch of interactive maps that we're linked to or will be with through our website. But Tony, you can pretty much look at every state around the West and see what the situation is. Oregon looks a little better than some. Nevada looks pretty awful for being up to date with the assessments.
Yeah, Nevada definitely stands out amongst the states. It definitely, it's got a lot that has not ever even been looked at, and the ones that have been looked at, I think only 10% of them are meeting the standards. And a lot of those are huge, huge tracts of land. There's other states like Montana where there's a lot of small tracks, and a lot of those have been looked at and seem to be getting better grades. There's also, though, some question about how much stock to give those evaluations that they're actually being given, how thorough those are.
Jess Burns and Tony Schick from our EarthFix unit talking to us about their grazing across the West and their investigation. I still remember from the piece, Jess, the exclamation about, that's a lot of land out there. How much land, I mean, given how scrubby the vegetation is, how well does it support any animal?
Well, the forage out there just isn't very good. I mean, we're talking bunch grass, I think she calls it winter wheat, and then some, you know, then you have the invasives like cheatgrass out there that can do in a fix. Basically, cows can eat it if they need it. But Angie Ketcher told me that it takes about, 25 to 50 acres to run one cow for the season out there. I mean, it's a massive amount of land. And that exclamation that I did in the piece, I mean, that was pure gut reaction because those mountains were way off in the distance. I mean, it was miles and miles, I mean, just specks on the edge of the horizon. And I was just astounded. And that is, so these lands are broken down into allotments, which are kind of the management areas, like the individual management areas. Ketcher's allotment that they're grazing on with four other ranchers is about 300,000 acres. And 150,000 acres of that is hers alone for her 900 head of cattle. So it's giant.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Tony Schick, what are some of the really on-the-ground assessments that are used as measurements for land health?
There's a set of criteria. One of them is just vegetation. How much vegetation, where is it, what kind. Another is riparian health, streams that are flowing through the allotment. Is there enough water? Is there enough vegetation on the stream banks? Because when that vegetation on the stream banks gets low, there's nothing to hold the soil in place, there's erosion, and then all of a sudden that stream is holding less water, and that's going to make, drought worse in an area that's already often starved for water. Those are some of the big things. There's also, the big issue of habitat for endangered species. The sage grouse is a big deal right now.
So as we talked about the size of the land, Jess, and how much it takes to support cattle, I can't imagine that the humans are any more any less, what I'm saying is they're not distributed across the landscape any more thickly than the cattle are.
No.
Certainly not the BLM folks. So is that the major issue here? They just don't have the bodies to go out and do the assessments?
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely the issue. And, there's what we've found here is there's a lot of kind of minutia to wade through, because there's a lot of different kinds of assessments that the BLM does. They do compliance checks to make sure the ranchers are doing what they're supposed to be doing. In Oregon and Washington, that's only happening about 25% of checks per year they're looking at. They're doing these rangeland health analyses that Tony was just talking about. And then they're doing like broader regional analyses. And I'm sure like within that that range, they're doing a lot other checks. And so, you know, some of these are really quick, but then other ones, it takes months and months and months, and there's a public process, and, you know, all of this, you know, it's the way that federal government works. You know, it does go slowly in order to do a thorough job.
Jess Burns and Tony Schick of our EarthFix unit have investigated grazing on federal lands across the region. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Bill in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, I got three questions. I'll take them offline after I explain them. First off, I'd like to have a complete description of what BLM is and when was it formed. From what I understand, it was from land that the railroads couldn't pay taxes on, the government took it off. So I'd like to answer that. And the other one is, from what I understand, the environment, and I believe also BLM land has to take a profit above even conservation concerns. From what I've seen, how they raped and totally destroyed our old growth forest, they have to take a profit above all, even if you ruin the environment. And the third one is with a water problem, such a problem in our country, droughts and everything else, fighting for water down the Klamath area. And what I see is that this watershed is completely destroyed by all the cattle on our BLM high desert areas because the streams aren't protected and there's no way of keeping the cattle away from the streams, and they eliminate the trees and everything, and they're trying to kill the wolves that do keep the elk population down. It helps develop the conservation and the environment around our streams, like it is proven in Yellowstone. So
okay. All right, let's get some answers. Thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate it. So Tony Schick, since you seem to be the historian of the group, let's talk about the history of the BLM. And I should point out, too, BLM in Western Oregon, where it manages the ONC forest lands, is somewhat different from BLM managing range east of the mountains. But go ahead and work on Bill's stuff there.
Sure. So the BLM grazing program, as it is actually a merger of, that wing of the BLM arose out of those conflicts in the West over grazing that I was talking about in the 30s, and that was actually something called the Grazing Administration. And then that ultimately then merged with the Bureau of Land Management, which was overseeing other things in the West, and still does, like oil and gas drilling leases and some recreation lands and some forest lands as well. So that's a little bit of the history there.
All right, so getting back to one of the major nubs of the story, though, is that if the information is not complete on a particular piece of land and the grazing permit is about to expire, if BLM can't get out to do the assessment, it gets passed along, Jess, like a kid who flunks a class and still gets moved along to the next grade?
It does. What happened is in 2004, there had become this big backlog in grazing permits, which are renewed every 10 years. Basically, the environmental reviews of these permits weren't being completed on time. And for a variety of reasons, you know, we heard that the paperwork, there was a change in the way that paperwork was done and change in the environmental regulations that required more of it. So there was more, less field time happening, more in office time. And so basically they were falling behind. And when they're falling behind and your permits aren't renewed, you know, ranchers really were starting to feel the pinch. I mean, it was an economic burden on them. Some of them, you know, are own huge plant tracts and are doing pretty well, own a lot of cows. But some of them are relatively small ranches that are kind of living a little bit closer to the line. And so, the cattle industry went to Congress and said, we need a fix for this. This isn't the rancher's fault that the BLM is falling behind. And so they went in and they created a one-year provision that allowed these permits to be renewed even if the environmental reviews weren't done. And that was renewed every year until 2014. There was an environmental group challenged it.
That was the Western Watersheds Project?
Right. And it was kind of a backfire, because instead of stopping that provision from being renewed every year, they just went ahead and made the provision law. I mean, they just plugged it in. And so now it's permanent. And basically what that allows the BLM to do is to renew these permits, and it doesn't give a sell-by date on the other side. It doesn't say, oh, well, we can renew this, but you have to have the permit, the environmental review done within 2 years. It doesn't do that. That environmental review can stretch out. It can even be renewed again for another 10 years. We're not to the point where, a third review, we know that's going to start to happen. But and it also doesn't matter if the land is impaired or if the land is in good shape. If the environmental review isn't done, then the permits can be renewed.
So what is the potential for change here for the BLM to catch up with the backlog? I don't see any political representatives at the Intermountain West getting out there and saying, hey, let's upsize the government out here, when it's already fairly unpopular, as was demonstrated by the takeover of the Malheur Refuge. Tony Schick, what do we know about the directions that things might move from here?
I would not say the outlook is good. The federal funding does not look like it's going to take a turn upwards at any point, nor does local funding.
Yeah,
no, the problem.
Can I jump in real quick? In fact, Obama's proposed budget this year for the BLM, it doesn't even look like it's going to keep up with inflation.
Really?
So basically, the BLM's losing ground this year.
All right. So the prospects appear to be just about the same going on for a while longer?
And that's if Congress passes that budget, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
So I mean, it's a proposed budget. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, and so one of the big problems here is that the program doesn't pay for itself. There's a funding shortfall in the grazing fees that they require from ranchers don't cover the costs of the program, so they're underfunded and they're understaffed. And I haven't seen any proposals coming forward yet that would approach how to fix that. There's obviously efforts to prioritize at the BLM level, but that's more of a triage than a real permanent solution. The other thing that's been tried out is kind of trying to get ranchers to do a little bit of their own monitoring, and clearly that's not the same, but some people are hoping that can fill the gap and also get ranchers engaged in the environmental health process.
All right. Well, you've certainly given us an education in what's going on with grazing on public lands across the West. Tony Schick and Jess Burns from our EarthFix unit, thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.